Blog Talk Radio.
Special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
Everybody, you are here, and this is the Boxing Source Radio Show, Sunday, February 24th, 2019. I am your host, James Bell. I am the lead boxing analyst for the Cold Hard Truth on Sports. That is a blog that's thechtonsports.com, so you'll be able to catch boxing articles and more at thechtonsports.com. And we have about a one-hour live show today covering the events that happened over the course of the previous week. If you want to get in to participate on the boxing talk, you can call in at 347-237-5539. Once again, that is 347-237-5539. Press the one key to get on queue, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. Got a few events to cover here in this particular episode. We did have a pretty much a grudge match of sorts that took place over in the UK yesterday, and then also we had like a co-feature bout. That was within the heavyweight division, that kind of like raised a few eyes for a few people that were watching that particular telecast. So we're going to, basically get into that as well. You did also have a former champion there that was back in action since he lost the featherweight title that he had. So we were able to see him back in action in that particular card as well. And then we'll get into the fight that was for the WBC Super Middleweight Championship that happened last night. That was, kind of like murdered in a little bit of controversy. But I want to get, into first what happened in the O2 Arena in Greenwich. Want to start with the main event there, that headline. As you had the vacant IBO version of the super middleweight title on the line between James DeGale and Chris Eubank Jr. Of course, you have, James DeGale, former super middleweight champion here. As, he's trying to, get back into the ring here, but we have seen DeGale in a share of his tough fights, over the past few years or so. He did score, that win in order to win the IBF version of the super middleweight title back in 2015. Defended it a few times before going up against Badu Jack in 2017, which was a very close back and forth fight between the two. Over there at the Barclays Center, where it ended up being a majority draw. Few people felt that Badu Jack won that fight, but in essence, with that majority draw, James DeGale was able to keep that IBF version of the belt until the end of 2017, where he lost to Caleb Truax. And then 4 months later, he was able to face Caleb Truax once again and then end up getting a unanimous decision win, but eventually vacated that IBF super middleweight title. So this is, how we pretty much got this point for James DeGale. to face a Chris Eubank Jr. While on the flip side, you had Chris Eubank, you know, had been a contender there, super middleweight, had the IBO version of the super middleweight title once before, did have his fight against Billy Joe Saunders back in 2014, where he lost by split decision. But then eventually moved up to super middleweight, got the IBO version of the super middleweight title, and did participate in the World Boxing Super Series as super middleweight, first getting his KO win over Avni Yildirim in October of 2017 before going up against George Groves, and lost that fight by unanimous decision. Had like an interim belt that was on the undercard of the finals for that World Boxing Super Series between George Groves and Callum Smith. And, you know, after that particular fight that he had against J.J. McDonough, which was, you know, kind of like a pretty much like a lackluster win of sorts. It wasn't like he was very good in the win, but he still got the stoppage win anyway. You know, they were talking about him potentially fighting James Gill at that particular point, but didn't take until about, you know, the end of last year for, you know, us to eventually find out that he would fight James Gill. So that's how, you know, we were able to get this fight. This is like a grudge match of sorts. They had, like, you know, stories of sparring against each other, which was kind of a theme in a couple of fights that we had at the O2 Arena. So that's what we had here going into this particular matchup. Was a crossroad fight for both fighters. Well, at least to me it was, because, you know, was very disappointed in the performance of Chris Eubank against George Groves. Going into that fight, I felt that, you know, Chris Eubank, you know, could have showed that, okay, he's a serious guy, serious contender in the super middleweight division. And the way that he could prove that was, you know, defeating George Groves and then getting into the finals of the World Boxing Super Series. But then, you know, he just couldn't really get over the whole hump over George Groves. Was fairly one-dimensional in that particular fight. Was just looking for one big shot and didn't necessarily get it. So it was just, for me, it was just this particular matchup was just a fight to say, okay, is either fighter willing to do enough to continue their career in the super middleweight division? You know, going into the fight, I felt that Chris Eubank should be the younger guy, should end up being the fresher guy in this particular matchup, and should be able to come out with the victory. You know, it was just something for me to, like, look at because, you know, here in this particular matchup for Chris Eubank Jr., you didn't necessarily see his father there directly, you know, in his corner. He was in attendance, but he wasn't in his corner. You know, of course, Eubank Sr. usually was, you know, in the corner of Eubank Jr. for a majority of his fights, but we wanted to see you know, what would happen here in this particular matchup. And, you know, for me, I wanted to look at if Chris Eubank Jr. did, you know, was going to be doing anything much different in this fight than in his previous fights or his previous high-profile fights, and if James Gale still had, you know, the energy to, you know, keep up with somebody like Chris Eubank Jr., who, usually pressures his opponents, but if you're able to box well against him, then he'll just, you know, go into a set where he's just going to be one-dimensional and look for the right hand. But, you know, I kind of like saw a little bit of hints of that in the first couple of rounds, but, you know, even with that, you still saw Eubank being able to catch James McGill with that right hand, had him in trouble, and, you know, was, you know, able to have James McGill go down on the ropes within the second round. So you had like a sitting and eight count for James McGill in that, you know, in that second round. And, you know, that was pretty much the moniker of the rest of the fight. You really didn't see that much coming out of James McGill other than a few couple of rounds. But then, you know, Chris Eubank was still able to catch him with another, you know, right hand in the 10th round and just blitzed him and put him down to the pretty much the one knee there. And then that kind of like was the moniker for the rest of the fight. You did have, you know, one point where Eubank Jr. was up close and like ducked down on the Gill and then lifted him up with his shoulder and then threw him down to the canvas. You know, had him be deducted 1 point, but that wasn't, you know, basically enough to like kind of like have the fight in doubt. Went the full 12 rounds and Chris Eubank Jr. scores a unanimous decision with scores of 114-112, 115-112, and 117-109 to get that IBO version of the super middleweight title that he's held before. Real quick, wanted to add in a caller, area code 646. What's good with you?
Yo, JL, what's good, man? It's your boy, Matt.
It was good there, Matt. How you been?
I'm good, man. I heard you talking about the Eubank Miguel matchup. I thought Eubank really he did what he was supposed to do. I was very surprised at how poorly Miguel performed. Miguel got up to a decent start in the first round, but it seems as soon as he tasted the power of Eubank, he was just in survival mode from then on. I wouldn't be surprised if it comes out that he say he was injured or something like that, or just something's not right with him, man. I guess he's shot born. I don't know what it is, but as soon as Eubank hit him in that second round, it seems the only thing Miguel wanted to do the entire fight was clench hold, literally jump on top of Eubank. He wasn't interested in fighting, man, but Eubank had a decent performance, so hopefully this is something that he can...
Yeah, now, you know, with his win, getting him that version of the of a super middleweight title, that puts him in the mix with the other super middleweight champions that are out there, including one that was newly crowned, which we'll talk about later. But how would you kind of, like, grade Eubank's performance against the Gale? Because I think that, you know, while he was able to do a few things against DeGale, it may have been because of, you know, DeGale's, like, inactivity because, you know, people that may have felt that if DeGale was going to win, he was going to be the better boxer. He had that, you know, better boxing ability over the course of his professional career, but he wasn't able to, you know, pull the trigger, as you were saying, after getting hit in the second round.
Yeah, but are we really going to say that DeGale was inactive, or are we going to credit Junior for making him inactive? You know, it's always a catch-22 when we talk about guys that are not letting their hands go. They're not letting their hands go for a reason. I'm pretty sure if DeGale was in there with a guy that wasn't so powerful, that wasn't hitting him so hard, he would have no problem letting his hands go. You know, he seemed to let his hands go when Junior had his back turned and he was punching Junior in the back of the head. So,
oh,
and you know,
in the last few rounds.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah, he ain't let his hands go. Well, that's probably because he ain't like what was coming back at him.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that could be something there because, you know, it may have been a little bit different than, you know, when he fought Truax the second time, because, you know, I didn't, like, necessarily expect DeGale to defeat Truax in that rematch, but he was able to pull it out then. But I guess, you know, here, that just couldn't be the case. It's not like, you know, maybe, you know, Truax didn't really, you know, have something where he was, like, known for, you know, being a power guy, but he was just somebody that was just coming forward against his opponents. You know, they just kept working and working and working. And then eventually wear his opponent down, where, you know, Eubank kind of, like, looks for trying to score that power shot. And, you know, I think with Eubank also, especially in the first half of this fight, he did try to, you know, lure, DeGale in a couple of times. So, you know, while, you know, DeGale was able to throw a few combinations in the first few rounds, he still had to wait for that counter to come from Chris Eubank. So once Chris Eubank started to time what James DeGale was doing, he was a little bit more successful with that right hand.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know. I can't really tell what DeGale's game plan was. I don't know. I just don't know what he was doing in there, to be honest with you. I can see clearly what Junior was trying to do. Junior was trying to stay active, was trying to hit him with powerful shots to hopefully get him out there. You know, even towards the end of the fight, Junior, he was still going for the knockout, you know? I was more surprised with Junior's performance than I was DeGale's performance. I did think DeGale would win, but it was only because I thought that Junior wouldn't have a decent game plan, and if he did, he wouldn't be able to stick to it and follow it. The fact that he was able to have a game plan, execute the game plan, and stick to it throughout the fight, I think that says a lot about his growth in his career.
Yeah, I think it is partial to his growth in his career, but also, you know, having a different voice in his corner after every single round, because, you know, when I was, you know, opening with this fight and the result, I was talking about, like, how Chris Eubank Sr. wasn't mainly in the corner and in his son's ear like he was in previous fights, so that, you know, maybe that would have been, you know, a difference there as far as, like, how, you know, Chris Eubank Jr. approached this particular fight. Is like, you know, instead of just, you know, abandoning the game plan and just trying to, you know, swing it and swing his right hand like he did in the tail end of that George Groves fight, he kind of, like, stayed patient, tried to see what DeGale would do against him, and then just countered from that. And then he was able to be successful from there.
Well, where do you think Junior can go from here? You think he can compete with any of the top guys at 168?
For some reason, they kind of rank Eubank Jr. fairly high in the super middleweight division, and I don't really see him being that high of a guy there. Because, you know, you have the, you know, a new champ there in Caleb Plant that's out there. And you got, you know, what happened in the later fight for the WBC Super Middleweight Championship. Callum Smith is, to me, the top guy in the division. Gilberto Ramirez says he's staying, you know. So I don't see, like, where he would be in a position to, you know, fight for one of the four major titles and, you know, would kind of, like, have much of a shot against, you know, against those guys. So, I mean, for me, it's kind of like up in the air to see if, you know, he would eventually be like one of those top guys there in the super middleweight division.
Well, looking at the rankings of the sanctioning bodies, he is number three in the WBC. You expect him to move up to number two after Well, actually, he should be number one.
Next, number one. Because
one and two guys fought yesterday.
Yeah.
So he should move up to number one in the WBC. He's already number four in the WBA. So, you know, he has options. It's not like he doesn't have options. So I think he should be patient, maybe go after Darrell, as you'll probably discuss later in his next fight, or see if he can make that All-England matchup with Callum Smith.
Yeah, I think the fight against Callum Smith would probably be a more likely fight. I think with Darrell, he'll probably have him match up, you know, with Benavidez once Benavidez has his interim fight first, because you know he's pretty much like, you know, a champion recess. So once he, you know, has one fight out of the way, he'll be able to immediately contend or fight for that WBC title. And so I think that's what's going to happen with the WBC. So it just leaves, you know, what happens with the WBA, and a fight between Eubank and Callum Smith over in the UK will, you know, pretty much garner enough interest for that to happen. So it's just that, you know, I know that Eubank got the win and he was able to, you know, make those adjustments, but I just would have to see, you know, how he would match up against a guy like, especially against Callum Smith, the guy that has length and, you know, has a little bit of pop, you know, behind his punches too. So if they do make that matchup, that could be something there that where Eubank would have to, you know, study a little bit to see what Callum Smith can do in the ring, because he's not going to be able to fight, you know, at a distance against him in that one. Also, you know, that happened in the undercard, you had the co-feature bout, which was a heavyweight bout between the former WBC heavyweight champion, Bermain Stiverne, or Bermain Stiverne, or, you know, how he wanted to be called, against Joe Joyce.
Call him Wash. Joyce. That's his name. His name is Wash.
we kind of seen that Bermain Stiverne was, you know, basically taken out by TKO by Joe Joyce in the sixth round. You had, you know, in the first round, you know, Bermain Stiverne trying to do a couple of things to try to test Joyce's punch resistance, but that didn't necessarily work. So after that first round, you pretty much saw five more rounds of the same thing. You know, Stiverne was, you know, seriously hurt in round three, and then went down to the canvas. But, you know, at that particular time, Joe Joyce wasn't able to get the stoppage. But, you know, over a sustained amount of time and a sustained amount of punches that Bermain Stiverne was taking, the referee ended up stepping in to, you know, call a halt to the bout in the sixth round for Joe Joyce to get the eighth win of his professional career and move him up in the rankings for the WBA regular title. So they kind of like say that he is the next in line to fight for the WBA regular championship. They're, you know, currently held by Emmanuel Char. And I'm not sure, you know, when they're going to try to put that together. But in reference of Joe Joyce, they are kind of like having him matched up against, you know, the big boys of the heavyweight division. They were asking them about, you know, how he says that he would fare against the top guys, you know, Anthony Joshua, Deontay Wilder, and Tyson Fury. And, you know, they also, you know, were saying him potentially fighting Luis Ortiz later in the year. So, I mean, for me, I've, you know, kind of like put Joe Joyce as somebody that just is got it comes forward and just punches and punches and punches, but I really don't see, you know, that much behind his punches. You know, they call him the juggernaut. Well, yeah, okay, you can, you know, see that you can run through everybody or people can hit you and you still go come forward, but you also got to be able to throw some punches behind it. So, you know, with that, I'm not sure, like, how he would fare against, you know, those top guys. And actually, I thought about some other person that he could potentially fight, but he's but I don't think Joyce is included in the rankings for the WBC, so nope, he's not. I was thinking of maybe him going up against Dominic Brazil later on down the line, but I just don't see. Yeah, and I know, Matt, you would like two big guys just going at each other, just swinging, until somebody goes down.
Big, sloppy heavyweights is my boxing form, man. I'm telling you, I don't know what it is about big, sloppy heavyweight, but listen, I love sloppy fights. I'm never going to lie about that. yesterday, I'm not going to lie to you, I thoroughly enjoyed Joyce versus Severn. Listen, that's my early candidate for fight of the year. Okay, it was just two guys, just two big sloppy guys, just banging each other. Basically, it was great. It was great. Like Severn caught Joyce with some good shots. So I was like, wow, okay. If Severn had if he was in shape, I think Severn could have knocked him out. But it seems Severn was intent on getting in shape during the fight. You know, he worked up a good sweat during the fight. It was like, that's the first sweat he worked up in quite some time. So it was like, yo, this is okay. I didn't even like the stoppage, to be honest with you. I thought the ref should have let the fight go on. Hey, listen, what Ivan Drago said, if he dies, he dies. Just listen, let the man take the punishment that he was taking.
If he
falls.
If you want to, yeah, if he falls, I guess.
See if he falls. Just see if he falls, man. See if he falls.
Hey, I'm surprised you didn't say because they stopped it because it was in the UK.
Of course. Listen, good old British stoppage. You know what that is. That goes without saying. That is a classic British stoppage. Listen, Severn wasn't in trouble. Severn was walking back to his corner with the ref like, yo, man, I could have kept taking more hits. Like, why you stop the fight, man? But it is what it is, man. Apparently, the WBA did make this fight a final eliminator for the regular title. So he is indeed in line to fight Manuel Char next. As we know, Manuel Char had his fight with Fast Fred Okendo canceled because Okendo refused to sign the contract, you know, Anthony Joshua style. So, you know.
What?
Joyce is in line to fight Manuel Char, I guess. But what's going to happen with this little four-man tournament that the WBA announced? What was it, just a month ago they announced a four-man tournament. It was supposed to be Jarrell Miller versus Trevor Bryan, and then it was supposed to be Fred Okendo versus Manuel Char. Now, if Joyce is getting the regular title shot, then what's going to happen with the tournament? Because Miller is going to fight AJ, so what's going on? I don't know what the WBA is doing.
Well, I guess it's kind of like a similar situation to, you know, the tournament that they, you know, pretty much created in 2016 when, you know, they thought that, you know, Tyson Fury was going to rematch Vladimir Klitschko, but, you know, he kind of like delved into, you know, powder a little bit and, you know, food. And
white
that kind of like fell through.
Shout out to Grandmaster Flash.
You know, and then you had, who was it, Luis Ortiz that, you know, could have fought Usunov, but, you know, said, hey, man, pay not good, pay not good. I not fight, pay not good. So, you know, they kind of like shit them for that. So I guess it'll be pretty much that same situation because, hey, you got the super title that's already going to be on the line in June 1st. And, you know, yeah. Now it seems like Joe Joyce is going to face Manuel Char. But something tells me that I don't think Manuel Char is going to go for that particular fight. He's going to try to find a way out of that, like Fred Akindo is finding his way out of fighting for the regular title. Real quick, we got 813 on the line. You are now on the Boxing Source Radio Show.
Hey, what's up, Jay? What's up, Matt? Hey, just real quick, just a follow-up on what you guys were talking about in regards to the Juggernaut, as aptly named, and Severn. Well, we already know Severn came in at a career-high 273. And I looked at it, I said, what the hell is he doing? Because his previous high was at 254, something like that. So this time, Jens is training with Terrell Miller type training, just eat to get his weight up as much as possible. He knew he was going to absorb a lot of punch in this fight. And to his credit, he got some rounds in. He got some rounds in. He just gets flat out knocked out by Joe Joyce. But my main thing, what you guys are talking about now, is how in the hell get mandated as an eliminator. For one, Joe Joyce has only got 7 victories, so he has volume 1. And at this point now, Severn is his toughest, is his biggest name, per se. And I give some credit to Severn, former WBC champion a few years ago. We know that, so I give him that much credit. But other than that, Joyce has volume 1 up to date. He's only 7 wins in. And even Severn, we know his story all too well. Went 12 rounds with Wilder, gave the title to Wilder, was inactive for quite some time, I think came back, had 2 victories, and then, of course, had the rematch with Wilder and got blown out in 1 round. So how do they justify this as a title eliminator when both guys have done nothing? It's just crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But
yeah, yeah, I agree with you, man. I kind of find it, you know, strange as well that Joe Joyce was able to, you know, be put into this position. But the WBA, like, has some type of continental title given to Joe Joyce back in December 1st when he was part of that Wilder Fury undercard. So they did, like, place him in the rankings then, and then, you know, after that, just had him fight Severn 2 months later and just say, hey, this is, you know, going to be for an eliminator for the WBA regular title.
And real quick, I mean, for them to do that, I have no evidence but just my personal opinion. It looks like they're trying to jump on the George bandwagon, and they're thinking that this guy's going to do big things and try to fast track him to the top. So, and if I'm correct, who is JoJo's promoter? Is that David Price, guys?
It's
JoJo's promoter is Richard Schaefer, Ringstar Promotions.
Okay, and even then, so it's someone that has ties to the has some pool within the Texas organization. So I'm sure Richard Schaefer probably pulls some strings in order to get that mandated out there like that. But like I said, probably just trying to fast track the kid. That's probably why.
Yeah, I mean, I just, you know, find it interesting that they would kind of put Joyce in that particular position that fast, especially, you know, when, for me, you know, Bermond Severn wasn't even anywhere in the rankings for the WBA, like nowhere near the top 15. You know, for being inactive.
That's the interesting part. So if Severn would have won, does that mean he gets a title shot? I mean, does the WBA really want to repeat the WBC's mistake that they made in 2016? I mean, I don't know what they were thinking. I guess maybe they knew Severn had no chance of winning. I thought Severn would win the fight until I saw the weigh-in, and then after that, I changed my pick to Joe Joyce. But
you saw that he hit up Dunkin' Donuts a few times,
yeah.
and kind of
yeah.
got those you know,
Laverne looks like he's been hanging with me
double
for a
quarter
month.
Pounders, double quarter pounders with cheese. He hit that Popeyes 2-piece in a biscuit.
That's really bad. I was like, I don't know what's going on with this brother. I was genuinely shocked because he was talking shit. You know, Laverne, believe it or not, he could sell me on a fight, man. Because he'd be sounding like he's ready for war, like he's ready to come up with a body, like he's ready to kill somebody. And then when he shows up to the weigh-in, he's just looking like, all right, did it check clear yet? like, what's going on here, man? I was actually embarrassed for him, man. Because this guy, you know, whether or not we believe that he was a great champion, at the end of the day, he is a former champion. He should have some sort of pride, man. This is just bad. It's bad for boxing, what we saw going into this fight, man. It just really is. There's no other way around it. It was embarrassing. 273?
Yeah.
I just couldn't believe it.
I was like, yo, 273, man. I was like, yo, hey, he's coming in there. He's coming in there to pick up a check.
And you know what? You were right in the first place because you did say that Severn was going to get his ass beat. And me, I was like, nah, Severn, you know, he's a former champion. He's experienced. You know, Joyce don't have no real experience. Joyce get hit a lot. Oh, Severn's going to beat him. And you was like, man, that's your favorite line, man. I don't know. you was right, man. You was definitely right.
I was like, yo, the dude ain't come out since he ain't said nothing, you know, since that Wilder fight. I'm like, yo, this guy's like MIA, like dude's been hiding or whatever it is. So I was like, he ain't gonna come in here and say that. Okay, this. You were talking a whole bunch of stuff like, yo, this is my pass back to a world title. You know,
yeah.
This is my shot. I was like, oh man.
He said he was taking on the top guys after he beat Joyce.
Yeah, he's going to take on the top guys. He was talking all that stuff to Radio Raheem. I was like, nah, man, I ain't buying this. I ain't buying it.
Listen,
ain't
I'm a sucker for pre-fight festivities, man. I'm not going to lie to you. All that stuff. Hey, listen. They can sell me on a fight, man. I'm a sucker for all of that.
Okay, we're gonna talk about that here later on too, because I'm gonna freak up what happened on Tuesday. But so that kind of like looks at what went down over at the O2 Arena with Eubank winning that IBO super middleweight title and Joe Joyce defeating Bermond Severn. You did have Lee Selby come back to defeat Omar Douglas in his first fight since losing to Josh Warrington. And he actually moved up to lightweight after being there in the featherweight division. I actually thought that was a good little scrap between Lee Selby and Omar Douglas. Douglas was just continuing to come at Selby. Had a little bit of success there in the first few rounds or so, but then Selby kind of like made adjustments and was boxing a little bit better. And that's, kind of like how he was able to pull off the win. We got about 8 rounds to 4 by 2 scorecards, but I thought it was pretty much like a 7-5 fight, and I didn't think that, they were going to give the fight to Omar Douglas, with him being away from the U.S. So, that's kind of like what we see there with Lee Selby. He has that move up to lightweight. I don't think he should really stay there at lightweight because, he got tagged a few times by Omar Douglas there, and, someone with a good little pop at lightweight would be able to really hurt Lee Selby, especially when, Josh Warrington was able to kind of like outwork him for him to lose that featherweight title. So there's that. Just wanted to, move quickly into the next major fight that happened yesterday. For me, it kind of like took a while for this fight to go down for the WBC super middleweight title. Anthony Durrell and Anthony Yildirim. This was on Fox Sports 1. You know, they had the telecast. It started at 10 p.m. Eastern time, and I don't think this fight happened until, like, what, 12:15 or something like that? It was like they
had... I fell asleep. I woke up, like, after midnight. I was like, fuck, I missed the fight. And then they were still hyping the fight. I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah, man. I was like, yo, they had, like, all these fights on. They had this, oh, man, which one I saw? Hernandez, Rosario, and then they had, like, some other fight on, and then they had the Jamal James fight on. I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know that all of these fights were going to be part of this telecast.
They didn't know that all these fights were going to be part of the telecast. Because when I woke up, it said college basketball was supposed to be on. I said, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah, man, I was like, hey, whoa. Like, man, they just now starting this thing? And so, yeah, they had it going on. And, of course, he had Anthony Yildirim, who was, you know, part of the World Boxing Super Series, and got knocked out by Chris Eubank Jr., then had the string of wins. Actually, he was, you know, fairly active in 2018 after that loss. So they kind of, like, you know, had his momentum up a little bit. And then Anthony, the dog, Durrell, had his, you know, set of fights. Yes, he did beat Caleb Truax, got that TKO victory over him a few years ago. But, you know, kind of was a little bit disappointing in the last couple of fights that he had. So here against Yildirim, it was, you know, a good little scrap between the two. Yildirim was, like, coming forward at Durrell, but, you know, a lot of his punches seemed to be, you know, either arm punches or inaccurate, while, you know, Durrell was kind of focused and hitting them a little bit better, had a little bit more snap behind his punches. Was connecting with a few more body shots, particularly in the first half of the fight. It was just that he allowed Yildirim to kind of, like, get a little bit too close, and that's when all that, you know, headbutt action came in early to, you know, have, like, a small cut on Durrell's eye, but it didn't really affect him for the major course of the fight. But starting out with around, like, round five, you kind of seen Yildirim get back into the fight a little bit. He was, you know, connecting a little bit more with the shots. Some of the shots weren't getting blocked by, you know, Anthony Durrell like they were in the first four rounds or so. And the fight was getting a little bit closer, you know, from my perspective. But, you know, Durrell was still, you know, still in the game. He was still, you know, very confident that he pretty much had the advantage in this particular fight. You know, there were some instances where there was, like, good action on the inside from both fighters. You know, but, you know, I just felt that Durrell had a little bit more success there, you know, on the inside, and especially from distance, because I really didn't see Yildirim being very accurate at all from a distance there. So, you know, Durrell was working that jab, you know, a little bit better, but, you know, he didn't necessarily have, like, a go-to punch, like, for a right hand, like a right hook or a right uppercut or anything like that. It was just, like, he was just basically, you know, outboxing Anthony Yildirim. But, you know, over the course of the last few rounds or so, that cut over the eye of Durrell started to get worse and worse, and they, you know, ended up having the fight halted there, which I kind of felt was fairly weird because they stopped it, like, right in the middle of the round. They didn't wait until the end of the round. And then the doctor just checked it and just said, oh, nope, that's it. This is too bad. And Yildirim's corner was so confused because they said they were acting like Durrell's quarter, like Durrell wanted the fight stopped. He didn't want to do anything. And I was like, nah, man, that's not how the rules go over here. And so it did go to the scorecards, and it ended up being a split decision, which, you know, kind of like found it weird that one, you know, fighter scored that bout 98-92 for Yildirim. I'm like, 8 rounds for Yildirim? I'm like, where did you get that from? But two other judges had it 6 rounds to 4 for Anthony Durrell for him to win that WBC super middleweight championship. And, you know, he kind of like did his thing as far as like box a little bit, but I didn't see like any type of punch that really just said he like established a clear advantage over his opponent. It was just like he was just a better boxer, but nothing that really had Yildirim and serious trouble there in the ring. Start there with you, Matt. What did you think about it after you were able to, you know, catch this fight?
Well, I thought it was a good fight, actually. I'm not going to lie to you. I thought it was a pretty good scrap, nice little battle. I think if Durrell would have boxed more, I don't think the fight would have been as interesting because clearly he was the better boxer than Yildirim. The 98-92 scorecard was ridiculous. I thought 96-94 for Durrell or a draw at best was how you could have scored the fight. Durrell, very interesting, man. He's been talking about retirement a lot lately. You know, he wants to spend more time with his family. We know that he did come back from having cancer in, I believe it was 2006, 2007. So, you know, he doesn't love the sport like he used to. He wants to cash out against one of the champions and get out of the sport with his health intact. So he didn't fight like that yesterday, though. He fought like he was, like, ready for war, which I was pleasantly surprised at. I just thought he was going to stand outside, box and move, box and move, box and move. But he was like, no, we want to fight. So he's talking about fighting Caleb Plant next or possibly fighting David Benavidez. Whatever he wants to do, you know, I'm with it. Because I think he showed a lot yesterday. He's fully come out of the shadow of his older brother, who everyone thought was going to be the star of the family. I think Anthony Durrell really proved himself worthy of being called a champion yesterday.
Yeah, he kind of like, you know, worked his way to the win. And, you know, like I was saying before, he was, like, very confident in, you know, what he was doing in this particular fight. You know, while Yildirim was game and was coming forward, he just wasn't really affecting Durrell that much, you know, over the course of the fight, other than, you know, being real close and then getting that, getting those couple of headbutts in that, you know, affected his eyes so that, you know, once, you know, he was landing punches on Durrell, it did, like, have the eye going a little bit, you know, getting a little bit worse. But, you know, his Durrell's overall condition was still fine for this particular fight. It wasn't like he was in any serious trouble there. So, you know, maybe with Durrell, like you were saying, if he does get that fight against Benavidez later on down the line or Caleb Plant, which – you know, a unification bout would be, you know, pretty good. Something that, you know, PBC wouldn't mind, you know, making happen out there. So that could be in the cards there for Durrell before he kind of like, you know, winds down in the back, you know, back part of his professional career. Terrell, what's your insight on what happened there with Durrell and Yildirim?
No, I'm pretty much spot on in agreement with what Matt surmised of the fight. I give a lot of applause to Durrell for his effort. It was a good back and forth fight, but you could still, despite that, you still see that Durrell pretty much had the advantage in most of the exchanges. There was a lot of just flat out, both guys sitting right in the middle of the ring, throwing their hooks and punches and things like that, and just as you're from gate to Durrell. Durrell gave it back to him, and in most exchanges, gave it back to him even more. So, and to me, Durrell definitely earned his moniker in this fight, the dog. You know, he definitely showed some dog last night because, in a sense, in Durrell's career, we kind of known him to, in a sense, question his heart. right? And some previous fights. I think back against Arthur Abraham, like he just showed a tendency to try to find a way to get out of the fight. But this one, he definitely fought until it stopped from that cut in the eye and everything. I give a lot of kudos to Durrell. Like you perfectly said, he definitely earned his championship moniker last night. He definitely earned that belt. So, you know, as we say now, when you have a belt, particularly a major belt in the division, you can definitely have some numbers come to you and throw some names your way in the hopes of giving some fights. So hopefully this will, in a sense, rejuvenate him and shy him away from that retirement talk. Because, like I said, you got some big fights out there. Even if he takes like a defense for right now, and which you think someday he would definitely win. After that, maybe go for a unification bout, something like that. So hopefully that will shy him away from that retirement talk. Because he definitely has still a lot left within the sport and a lot left to give. So he's not physically damaged, nothing like that. But great effort. I was so proud to see that.
Yeah, his effort was, very good to me. You know, with him, being in the game for, as long as he's been in, it's been, about almost 14, 15 years of pro. Sometimes, being in that long, you would kind of like say that, maybe you would try to like wind down your career, but he was able to put himself in a position to, fight for another world championship. And, we got this opportunity and took, complete advantage of it with his, overall boxing skill right there. So, with that being said, now he's kind of like, put in a position to, get these other fights that are high profile. In the super middleweight division out there. So like I was saying, he set himself up for like a potential unification fight against Caleb Plant, who is the, IBF championship. And we still got to see what is going on with the WBO situation as, the WBO champion, Gilberto Ramirez, had been considering moving up to the light heavyweight division. But that isn't kind of like set in stone yet. And then
he's just not giving up his title.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing.
I mean,
it was
if they let Canelo go up to 158.
Yeah, right.
And
yeah,
Canelo
exactly.
didn't have to relinquish his titles, why the hell should Zerto have to relinquish his titles?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is, you can't, just give, give Canelo that benefit of a doubt, but you won't do it, for Zerto Ramirez when it comes to the WBO. So that's what we got in that instance. That kind of like, covers what happened there in that fight card, because, like I said, you had the Jamal James fight on there. It was like another fight that I was like watching. I didn't know Breeders' Press Cup was part of the card.
Al Heyman gotta fill these fight dates he got with somebody, man. Somebody got to take our money.
Oh man, that was like goodness. But you also had the thing there with Hernandez Rosario. Now I was watching that particular fight for a good little while, and I kind of like thought that Rosario would have had like the overall advantage, but at the first, pretty much in the first half of that fight, it kind of looked like Hernandez was like outboxing him, staying out of range from Rosario. But then, later on down the line, Rosario was able to catch up to him and end up getting that TKO victory there to score that win. But For me, I thought, like, before the fight, I thought that Rosario would be able to get the win, but, you know, he just had, like, a fairly slow start against Hernandez, but it ended up being a good result for him as he was able to get that TKO victory there to, you know, move to 18-1-1. But going into next week, we have, you know, the American Dream, and not necessarily, you know, talking about Dusty Rhodes here, but we're talking about the American Dream.
I'm putting it on the line. Hard times, daddy.
The American Dream, Harris Mandy Lara, going up against Brian Castano. In the main event for, looks like a 3-fight card over at the Barclays Center. And this is for the regular or the world title, I'd say, for the WBA. Of course, Arislan De Lara had the super title, but lost it to Jared Hurt last year in one of the best fights in 2018. So he hasn't, you know, been in the ring since then. Going up against, you know, undefeated contender Brian Carlos Castano. And the co-feature bout there will have Luis King Kong Ortiz going up against Christian Hammer there. So you're going to have a fight, heavyweight fight there between guys that are ranked within the top 15. So it's going to be something where, you know, kind of like going to look at, you know, where both guys are, specifically with Luis Ortiz, because I'm really interested to see how he performs against Christian Hammer. Because, you know, with his previous two fights, you know, going up against Razvan Kojanu, with Kojanu, he was able to, you know, take care of business like he's supposed to. But the fight against Kaufman, you know, kind of like left a little bit to be desired for, you know, a lot of people. You know, he was able to, you know, knock down Kaufman a few times, but, you know, it still took until the 10th round for him to, you know, kind of like have him be finished off there. So kind of like seeing if he could have a little bit of a better performance against Christian Hammer here in this particular matchup to kind of like keep him within the top rankings there in the heavyweight division. So that's what I'm looking for in that fight. And with, you know, Arislan De Lara, I'm kind of just hoping that no matter who's there at the Barclays Center, that a lot of people will be able to particularly stay there in the Barclays Center before that fight takes place. Actually, you know what?
Come on. That was cheap, man. It's Cuban night.
Hey, it's Cuban night. What is Cuban night? Yo,
it's
the
all Cuban card.
Yeah, that's what I was like. Yo, it's all Cuban card, but I'm like, yo, man, they could have had this in you know, they could have had this in Florida, man. I mean, something. I mean, I don't know. Because right now, and this is on Showtime, too. So they're going to have this thing featured on Showtime. So that's where, you know, the Showtime budget is going right now, is to fight cards like this. I'm going to start with Terrell on this one, what are you looking forward to seeing there with, you know, Luis Ortiz or, you know, Arislan De Lara, or, you know, what we're having here with the Ricardo Nunez, Eduardo Ramirez fight, if anything?
Well, you kind of look at the stories of Lara and Ortiz. Right? Lara's a softball, Cuban softball. We know him all as well. Has some great opportunities to, has had a belt at 154 at one point in time, gave that up, haven't seen much of him as we think we should have, right? Even now, it's like at 154, you look at 154, we got people like, who's out there, Hurd, the younger Charlo brother, Munguia, people like that, and you look at that and say, well, how does Lara fit into that at this point? And one, you need to be more active because, one, he's not a young guy anymore. So, he has a name, has a reputation, stuff like that. You want to see more from this guy. And at this point now, being in the game that's as long as he has, it's not he's not done by no stretch of the imagination, but we just need to see more. We need to be more active and need to make his presence known in order to keep his name at the top of that division. Because if not, you're just going to be a name. Just be a name. And you're going to be a person that's always kind of, in a sense, scorned, or I never get an opportunity. Well, be more active. And when we're in there, and impress people. Because we already know with his particular style, he's a pure boxer in that sense. He's not kind of ready to engage and give a power pleasing style. So we know Wilder's Norris story all too well. In regards to Wilder, I mean, I'm sorry, not Wilder, but Ortiz. I'm not going to say too much on Ortiz right now. I'm waiting for, I hopefully haven't missed it, about the fourth show where we talk about Fury's decision to jump over to ESPN and get co-promoted. Because that's the stuff I want to get into right there. Because right now, with that said, that even more locks up the top three in a sense, and it's fine. And people like Ortiz, the Hammers of the World, Matthew Boyd, Wozniacki, they're once again left buying for scraps and positioning, Dillian White, people like that. And even another man throwing it out, Joe Joyce. So we know Ortiz's story. So it's right now, like I said, the other stuff with the ESPN signing by Fury, that's really what's going to determine the division going forward for the next couple of years as far as who fights who.
Yeah, didn't necessarily cover the news there with Tyson Fury, yet, and how that kind of like affects the heavyweight division. But yeah, with Luis Ortiz, you kind of like want to see where he is going to be able to go next. If you have this thing with Tyson Fury kind of like having a domino effect on what other fighters are doing, particularly Deontay Wilder. If Deontay Wilder kind of like follows suit and kind of like tries to get a deal where he's going to be, part of, a co-promotional deal or whatever it is with Top Rank, which I don't know how that's going to end.
Hell no.
Like, come on, man. We talking about somebody that's advised by Al Heyman working with Top Rank for a deal? Nah, I'm not seeing that. So with that being said, that kind of like has like Deontay Wilder currently holding the bag as far as like what is going to be his next move, and how that kind of like says, okay, if Wilder, does this and has like a fight in the interim before having a rematch with Tyson Fury, if there's going to be a rematch, then where does that leave Luis Ortiz? So, for right now, he just got to see if he could be able to take care of business against Christian Hammer, see if he could, make it, have an impressive victory over Hammer, and then, move on from there. For me, with Arislandi Lara, yeah, it's like you said, you got a lot of those guys there that, are younger guys in the super welterweight division. And Jaime Munguia and Jared Herd and Jermell Charlo, but also, and of course, Charlo still has to figure out how to get that belt back from Tony Harrison. So, I mean, this is where he kind of like has to see where he could be positioned as far as like among the top five. Within that division once again. He's, been the guy that's been part of that division for, the longest time as far as, like, being at the top of the division. So it's going to be a question of, is he still pretty much around the top of his game or if he's on the downturn of it?
No, just stepping into the overtime section of the show. Just wanted to, you know, get into some extra boxing talk. You know, get into the whole thing with heavyweight division. We did, you know, mention a thing about Tyson Fury signing that multi-fight deal with ESPN, co-promotional with Frank Warren, Queensberry Promotions, and Top Rank Boxing there. Five-fight deal that's pretty much going to be in around the range of 80 million pounds. So he has that being worked out. They say that they're going to try to they're going to be announcing what his first fight is going to be soon. What that will be, I don't know. It's not really looking like that Wilder fight is going to be next. So that's, you know, highly unlikely. And, you know, the next day, we head over at the Madison Square Garden, the first press conference for Anthony Joshua versus Jerome Miller for the Unified heavyweight titles. You know, I was in attendance there at the Madison Square Garden along with Matt there. So we were able to see firsthand Jerome Miller, you know, look face-to-face at Anthony Joshua and give him a push and, you know, say that he's home, that you can't dictate anything to him, that, you know, you can't be coming up into his house and, you know, considering him to be the huge underdog. And apparently one person on here is very confident that the challenger is going to pull off the upset on June 1st.
At the Joshua Miller press conference, there I was watching that on Twitter, and I could correct me if I'm wrong, but there was some guy in the audience asking questions, and the camera panned to him, and the guy was like just wait, jumping up and down, yes Miller, yes he's ready, yes he's ready. And it looked just like Matt. So was that?
I don't think it looked a little bit like Matt. It may have looked like a guy that has another channel that has the initials. No, I should give up those initials because you probably know what I'm talking about. But Matt was cool. He asked
I was
to answer
the job
question.
I was a professional.
Yeah, he was a professional.
I was a professional.
He was a professional. You know, he didn't, you know, cut anybody off. He didn't ask, you know, 11 questions all at once when there was like a whole bunch of media people there. he didn't bring up the $50 million offer.
I wanted to. JR, it's funny that you mentioned the $50 million because right now I'm on Twitter and Steven Espinosa of Showtime just confirmed that Matchroom was sent the contract and they saw the contract and the contract said that Sky Sports got the UK rights to the fight and that the offer was real. I swear to you, I'm not making this up. He's on Twitter right now arguing with a fan about it.
Oh man, I gotta see this, bro. I'm gonna look it up. Come on, man, I'm gonna look it up because he's gonna, man, it's gonna be a Twitter war for the next day or so if that's the case, boy. Because I'm telling you, because they remember Espinosa and Hearn went back and forth about it, you know, pretty much back then. So my thing is like, okay. Why would you bring this up, you know, all this time? You know what I'm saying? So yeah, I'm gonna definitely look into that, especially when like you had a bunch of people pretty much call out like, okay, why did Frank Warren give up details like, you know, that BT Sport was going to be buying out the rights again. So that's going to be very interesting in that aspect. Now, in the case of, you know, this particular fight between Anthony Joshua and Jarrell Miller, it's going to get, you know, a little bit of interest because, you know, Matt isn't the only one that feels that Jarrell Miller, you know, would have a shot against Anthony to defeat Anthony Joshua.
He's going to beat him, not have a shot. So that's what I said. June 1st, the English muffin gets toasted. Okay.
Oh man, you had, you know, a few guys who was it, like, you know, Eddie Mustafa Muhammad, you know, a couple of, you know, other guys, you know, that's, well, they are around Mayweather's gym too. And I think Miller did some training at Mayweather gym at one point. But they feel like, you know, Miller is going to be, you know, the guy that has that Joe Joyce type of, you know, strategy. Just come forward, keep coming forward. And if he gets hit with a few punches, so what? He's still going to try to come forward and, you know, do his thing. But I'm just not, you know, overly convinced that his punch resistance is going to be the same against, you know, Anthony Joshua. And I think Joshua is going to be, you know, very prepared for this particular matchup. I think, like, he's already, you know, been, you know, training for this particular matchup right now. And it's like, you know, another, you know, 3 months before the fight happens. That's like, you know, 12, 14 weeks plus until this fight happens. So he's going to be ready to go in that aspect. But as far as, like, the rest of the card, don't be, you know, overly excited about the rest of the card. It's just going to be something there where it's going to be kind of like maybe a UK versus USA, or, you know, like an Irish versus USA theme card. So you
gonna
might
be trash,
see, like,
just say it. It's gonna
be
trash.
It's gonna be so bad. It's gonna be hot garbage.
Hey.
I'm gonna be there.
Hey.
But it's gonna be hot garbage.
Hey, when you get a chance, just speak on the fact, and real quick on this fight, the Joshua Miller fight. So Miller's going to proposing make $6 million for this fight, while Joshua will make $25 million. And I'm just going to just throw a shout out there to Mad Mike Ray, who's not on the show right now, where people like Wilder, I think it was last fight, made $4 million for the Fury fight, plus pay per view numbers. And just in contrast to Joshua, coming here to the U.S., he's on all the morning shows. He got to ring the stock bell for that one morning. He's on all kind of things in Wilder's country that Wilder hasn't even done yet.
Wait. Hold on. What has Anthony Joshua done in the USA that Wilder hasn't done already?
Well, one, like I said, he ran the stock show one morning last week. And he just come here making all kind of appearances, things like that. And things that
Deontay Wilder was already on the Breakfast Club. Deontay Wilder did the whole car wash at ESPN. Right? Like, what are we talking about here? If we want to talk about the money that Anthony Joshua is making, let's be accurate about it. None of this money that Joshua is making from this fight has anything to do with his viability in the USA market. This money is coming from Sky Sports, and it's coming from the zone. It has nothing to do with Anthony Joshua's Q rating in the USA. So at least let's be accurate about that if we're going to throw the money figure out there. The money that Deontay Wilder made has been because of his commercial viability in the USA market. So it is apples and oranges. If Anthony Joshua really want to show that he's taking over the world, that he's going to make a dent in the U.S. market, put the fight on pay-per-view. Don't put the fight on the zone. Let the people decide if they want to buy your crap, because the zone's not going to release the numbers, even though it's been reported by many different sources that Anthony Joshua's first fight on the Zone only had about 16,000 viewers. Okay, so let's be accurate when we talk about what Anthony Joshua means to the American market, and that is absolutely nothing, Squad Baby.
Yeah, but what does it mean to the world market? That's where this makes it comes
from. Who cares?
So,
I am an American.
So, hold on.
I'm an American. I don't care about the rest of the world. Who cares about the rest of the world? And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. Who cares about the rest of the world? You think I care if little Djibouti in Zimbabwe is watching an Anthony Joshua fight in some little hut somewhere? I don't care. I don't care where they're showing Anthony Joshua fights at. Only thing I know is in the USA, nobody cares.
Oh, this girl, come on, man. You talking about God bless America. Make America great again.
Yeah. Come on, man.
Trump 2020. Oh,
yeah.
Man. Look. I think what they're planning on doing is they're going to slowly, you know, incorporate Anthony Joshua into the American market. Not just, you know, with the shows, but also, you know, with sponsors and, you know, working with corporations. So, I mean, he already has the, you know, deal with Under Armour. So you're going to be seeing more of a presence of him being, you know, part of the sales pitch for Under Armour equipment and things like that. So you're going to see, you know, more of that happen. And I think what's going to happen next is that I think they're going to be positioning it to where they get as many viewers as they possibly can for this particular fight on the Zone. But it's going to be hinging on what happens before that, a few weeks before that, because of another fight that's going to be on the Zone. So that's going to be, you know, something to, you know, look out for there as well. The other thing that, you know, wanted to, you know, kind of like get out there, but I think, Matt, you could pitch in on this. It involves a particular middleweight that is a former champion.
Respect. Respect
of course,
JR.
That I still feel is an overrated middleweight, but you know, people still put him in high regard. But go ahead, Matt. Share the news for the people.
Well, the news that came out today is that Gennadyevich Golovkin, a.k.a. Triple G, a.k.a. Canelo's son, he is finalizing a historic, and that's not hyperbole, this is a historic landmark deal that he is finalizing with the Zone. If you want to talk about the money, that's fine. He's going to get $15 million his first fight, which is going to come late spring, early summer, and then he's going to go into a Canelo fight in the fall where he would make upwards of $30 million. But what's historic about this deal is that Triple G is going to get of the DAZN company, which is unheard of in boxing. It's never been done by a promoter. It's never been done by a fighter. Triple G is going to get equity in the DAZN company, and the equity is guaranteed. So even if the Canelo fight falls through, if Canelo loses to Jacobs, or Canelo refuses to fight Triple G, or Canelo moves up to 168, the equity in the company is guaranteed. So Triple G basically is part owner of DAZN USA, which is completely, this to me is the greatest deal a fighter has ever signed in boxing history. And that includes Floyd Mayweather's astronomical deals, because
thing that I was saying, and JR, you can back me up on this, I was like, I don't get why fighters are going to go to the zone when basically they're going to get paid a flat fee and there's no upside. The fact that the zone has offered equity within their company to a fighter to sign, future deals are going to get done like that. You know, I'm sure Anthony Joshua, Canelo, Eddie Hearn, Oscar are all kicking themselves because it probably never crossed their mind. Wait, I could get a piece of the company? So I think Triple G has done well for himself. He has changed the game of boxing, and it cannot be understated how massive a deal this is that he's about to finalize.
Yeah, if he is, you know, able to solidify this thing where he's getting a piece of, you know, the zone, that's, yeah, definite game changer. I think that there is one way or another that Hearn has some type of, you know, insider, you know, stock in the zone. I don't think that, you know, he would be doing what he's doing, as being involved as he is, to not have a piece of that company. Otherwise, he wouldn't have, you know, just went ahead and went with that deal with Simon Denyer and the other guy there that they have with DAZN and with Perform Group and Access Industries. So, but for Gennady Golovkin, you know, first, I mean, him having that $15 million guarantee for the first fight, regardless of who that is, that's pretty significant. And then, you know, potentially getting that third Canelo fight, I think that's something that where DAZN probably had to make that move, because if you think about it, with Canelo's deal, the way that they structured Canelo's deal, 5 years, 11 fights, $365 million, you're going to have to have some good list of opponents in order for you to make that type of money up, you know, regardless of whether that money gets, you know, returned from your buys in America, Canada, Germany, Japan, or whatever. So, you know, I think what they're going to do here is, you know, with Canelo, if he has his first fight, don't be surprised if it is in Japan. You know, it could still happen. They were, you know, potentially trying to have that fight with him and Ryota Murata before, you know, Murata lost to Rob Brandt. So, you know, maybe that was something that, you know, was in the plans there for Golovkin anyway. But now with it being on the zone, if you could put, you know, it on that platform to be, you know, televised internationally, then you get international eyes onto your product. Now you don't have to, you know, focus on just one or two countries. So there's that, and then yeah, just having, you know, part of the stock in the company, you just got to see, you know, how much of a percentage that he does have into it, and you know what that would mean in the future. Because yeah, if he's like the only one that was able to get that out of all of those people, that's a huge shot. Because he hasn't, you know, of course, you know how I feel about Gennady Golovkin. I feel he's overrated. So, and the way that, you know, he was, you know, making deals and up to this point, it's like, okay, he gets the easy way out. So maybe he's been playing these guys this whole time, mm-hmm. HBO and everybody, you know what I mean? Because if he's able to, you know, get all this money handed off to him, fighting these voluntaries and lowly ranked middleweights up until he was able to fight Daniel Jacobs and Canelo Alvarez, then, you know, what's he going to be able to do here now? And I still say that more than three fights, I don't know about that, man. He's, what, 37, 38?
Yeah, right, 37.
Now? Yeah, 37. So it's like, hey, I don't, you know, I don't see that much coming from him, man, you know, after these next couple of fights. But, yeah, if he's able to get that, man, that's real big. Got any input on that, Terrell?
Yes, that's the main thing I look at, too, because, like, you look at, in contrast, Canelo got a five-year, $365 million deal, and Golovkin is pretty much a landmark deal in box terms, right? And the main thing, you look at how many fights will he be able to get them, you know, within the strategy of the deal. I know those details aren't out yet, but like I said, you look at the stable of fights.
It's a minimum of three fights. It's a minimum of three fights, a maximum of six.
Yeah, and just even all of that knowledge right there, a minimum of three fights, and you're trying to project who's going to fight, like so possibly Robert Brent, something like that. But at the same time, those going to be, those, even if it is three fights, those will need to be notable names in that division. It can't be no patches, like the previous 25 people on his record, stuff like that.
No,
so,
you think not.
So he's got to fight. He's going to have to earn his money. You know, so that's going to be against the top of the division. And just a side note, is it so interesting to see people jump signing with ESPN, people signing with Zone, and just all, and even with PBC, some different names out there in terms of networks, but still the same thing. People are building their stables, and hopefully we can still see great fights across networks, things like that. But other than that, with Triple G, that's probably why we were waiting for so long to see who's going to sign with. They're probably just working on all the details of that deal and just surveying the landscape of boxing and trying to find out who's the best one to sign with and for what. So now we have it. That's definitely some great breaking news. Thank you for that.
Yeah, man. It's just, I mean, for me, I just see it as something where, you know, with Gennady Golovkin, if he, like I said, if he does pull this off and gets this type of deal, it's going to be, yeah, like the biggest deal in boxing, like Matt said, that you're able to, you know, not only get a purse off of your fights, but also, you know, get a percentage off of, you know, what the network does. You pretty much have a share of, you know, network things. It's like if a basketball player in the NBA has like a share of equity in the league and what, you know, the overall profits on top of, you know, getting what he gets from his contract. So that's a definite game changer right there, to say the least. Is there like anything else here before I like put a draw close to this particular episode?
Yeah, JR, what is your prediction for what the hell is going to happen with the heavyweight division?
Oh, man. the part with Fury, man, it just kind of like threw everything off for me because, you know, now it kind of like says, okay, now you got this guy having this deal, Joshua having another deal, and, you know, Wilder is supposed to be fighting Fury, and now he's kind of like, you know, stuck in the middle or something like that. And it's like, you know, like I was saying a couple weeks ago, I just didn't really feel that there was a rematch that was going to happen between Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder. I just couldn't put a figure on why that wouldn't be the case. And so now that Fury has this deal, it's like saying, okay, you know what? I'm not going to be paid such and such amount of money for fighting a guy that, you know, I felt that, number one, I brought the fans out to see the particular fight. And number two, I felt that I won the fight first, so I could get the lion's share of the purse. But the thing about it is that, okay, Wilder still has a WBC title. And for me, he shouldn't be put in a position where he has to fight Tyson Fury for that WBC title, because Tyson Fury is not a mandatory. And this whole thing about like Wilder potentially having to relinquish his title or forfeit his title for not fighting Tyson Fury, no, that's not the case, because Fury is not a mandatory contender for the title. So if the fight doesn't happen, then it doesn't happen. That whole purse bid thing shouldn't have, actually, if you think about it, the whole Pershman thing should have been put up in the first place because it's not for any type of mandatory position, or it's not a mandatory going up against a champion. It's just something to where once the first fight happened and there was like a supposed rematch clause, but there was no definitive winner or loser. So with there being a draw there, and I kind of like felt that right after this particular, right after that fight, with there being a draw, I didn't really think that there was any clear-cut obligation for either fighter to have an immediate rematch next. So with the WBC doing what they're doing, they kind of like did that in the interest of trying to make the most lucrative fight possible within the WBC and the WBC rankings, because other than that, you didn't have Wilder Fury, and you're not going to have Wilder Joshua. The next thing that they could have been able to do was the mandatory, which was Wilder Brazil. And we know that Wilder Brazil isn't going to get anywhere near that amount of revenue that the other two fights would have. So the WBC basically said, okay, y'all were giving us an inclination that y'all are going to fight each other again. So we're like, all right, cool. We're going to let y'all handle what y'all handle and then, you know, step back. But then once things didn't get done, then they were saying, okay, you know what? We're going to put an order to the fight and an entire purse bid deadline to it. And then after that happened, you know, they put an extension for that deadline. They were granted it. And then they did another extension and granted it again, but then it had no time frame. So with them having no time frame, that basically says, you know what? Now we don't have a rush to actually make the rematch because we're not being put to any type of deadlines to make it happen before purse bid is concerned. So now it's like, okay, now that Tyson Fury has this deal, you really don't have any type of mandate for, you know, the fight to take place. As the purse bid, there was, like, no new set deadline for it. So, I mean, right now, the heavyweight division is kind of, like, tied up to where, to what Tyson Fury does next and what his next decision is going to be. Because other than that, you kind of, like, have a Wilder holding the bag, and he's not necessarily cool with trying to do a co-promotional deal with another network or ESPN or another, you know, promotional company. So you may just see Deontay Wilder in a summer fight against maybe, you know, Dominic Brazil or Adam Kownacki next. And, of course, if it's against Adam Kownacki, you're going to be, you know, excited for it because it's going to be, you know, a big sloppy dude contending for a world heavyweight title.
My two children fighting each other.
So there you go. And on that note, that puts it into this particular podcast. We'll be back at it next Sunday, same time, same bat channel, as they say. Have you know, sister shows here on the Go Long Media channel on Blog Talk Radio, including Nicole Arshuth on Sports and Take the Cell. But until next time, folks, like I say, corner boxing is to hit and not get hit, not to stand and trade. On that note, I'm out. Have a good evening, everybody.